Hello, welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo. I have with me today Nonye Aganya. Nonye is a family nurse practitioner who is also an author. Nonye, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Matt. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. Before we get started, could you give us a brief history of yourself and why you got into the nursing field?
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here to share my experience with you and your audience. I'm a family nurse practitioner. I'm originally from Nigeria, West Africa. I'm the fourth of seven children. And as far back as I remember, I was always the nurturing child. I was the child that was always very curious. I had an interest always to find out why people acted the way they did. And I believe that made me a very good listener because a lot of people gravitated towards me. I had that innate desire and really the ability to make people feel comfortable around me because I will listen to them and I will have conversations with them. And just people easily trusted me. And looking back now, I'm not really sure why that was, but I probably had a bit of an anxiety myself, and I needed a way to make people comfortable around me so that I will be comfortable when I'm in their presence also. We all know about the transfer of energy that can take place when people are uncomfortable around us. We automatically become uncomfortable, and when we are able to make people to become relaxed in our presence, then we relax and trust is improved and communication flows a bit much easier. So people really felt comfortable talking to me, and it really was not a surprise when at the age of 16, I was made the school health prefect of my secondary school in Port Harcourt. I remember it was a job that I took very seriously. Some of my responsibilities back then, I remember, was to take care of my fellow schoolmates and just make sure that when they were sick, that they went to the school nurse and they got their medications from the school dispensary. And I made a list of students that were sick and always submitted that to the teacher. Even though I was just 16, I think it was something that really started to make me think about taking care of people eventually as a profession, because I just had that innate ability to make people feel comfortable. Of course, I graduated secondary school and then I went to the University of Nigeria and studied computer science. Obviously, that was not the path I had that chosen for myself. I think looking back, maybe parental pressure had a little bit to do with that. They probably wanted me to be a scientist. A lot of parents back home, you know, from Nigeria, will want their children to either be engineers or scientists or doctors or lawyers. And maybe that was why I ended up studying computer science at the University of Nigeria. I graduated in 1991, but once I got to America a year later, I arrived in 1992 at the age of 19. I went right back to my first love of wanting to take care of people. So back then, I remember that was in Brooklyn. I enrolled in a nursing assistant program and got my certificate, and always had a plan that I wanted to eventually become a registered nurse and hopefully study further. So of course, by the grace of God, I thank God I was presented with the opportunity to be a nursing assistant and then a licensed practical nurse, a registered nurse, and finally a family nurse practitioner. As a family nurse practitioner, now I have practiced for about 16 years, and 10 of those years I've been in the retail clinic setting. Prior to my retail clinic practice, I owned a practice with another nurse, family nurse practitioner. We co-owned a practice in Paterson, New Jersey, called the Anti-Thrombotic Center. We owned it for 7 years and independently operated it. So I got a lot of my experience of private clinic operation when I was the co-owner of this clinic. We managed patients that were on anticoagulants like Coumadin and Lovenox, and we transitioned them before surgical procedures and also transition them back to the blood thinners after surgical procedures. We made sure that that was done very safely. So it's safe to say, Matt, that in 25 years or so, I have always maintained some sort of patient contact in so many different settings. I have worked in home care, long-term care, and hospitals. I've also worked, of course, in outpatient medical clinics. So as different roles anyway, I have also worked as either the nurse practitioner, which I currently do, or I worked as the RN in the hospital, or I worked as the nursing assistant in the long-term care. This all led me to realize that there were so many different ways I had communicated with patients and always made sure that patients trusted me. I am married with four beautiful daughters. I'm married to my wonderful husband for many years. And my four daughters are ages of 26, 16, 12, and a seven-year-old.
Wow, that's a big family. and that's such a great history. Before we move on, can we talk about the early days when you were coming over from Africa? When you arrived to America and you started working in Brooklyn, was it hard as an immigrant working on the floor in New York City?
No, not at all. As a nursing assistant, I remember it was very easy for me to communicate with my patients. Patients were very comfortable around me. It was easy to connect with them. And I found that a lot of patients were actually intrigued by me. I had a lot of patients who wanted to know my background, my culture, my nationality. They wanted me to tell stories of my childhood. And some actually wanted, of course, to know what accent that I have. You know, some thought I was from the Caribbean or from Haiti. So all these questions of intrigue actually made me so happy to share my story because patients were their true selves. They did not need to pretend to be around me. And we developed trust very easily. And I was just 19, so I was so enthusiastic in my nature of caring for patients. I come from Nigeria, you know, like I said earlier, and Nigeria being a country, of course, where many people are looking for better opportunities to escape some economic and political hardships. So I actually counted myself, of course, to be one of the lucky ones to be able to make it to America and take care of patients, you know, doing what I really love to do, make people comfortable, make people feel healthier. And so it really was not a difficult thing at all, taking care of patients and building that trust with them. Sometimes, though, I must add that at some point I had a bit of puzzling experiences. I think that's what I'll call it. At that point, some experiences were a little bit puzzling to me because I remember some patients that were a bit more reserved when I came around them. They were not eager to communicate with me. And some of them actually just gave me the cold shoulder. And I'm not really sure why that was. That was back then. I had no clue why that was. I always just shrugged it off. And I never took anything personally. And I always gave everyone that benefit of the doubt. I was just happy to have a job in America. And I was just excited to care for patients. But over the years, of course, that has become a little bit clearer to me why patients have some of the reservations they have and what we must do as healthcare practitioners to help patients to begin to overcome some of their reservations and that way develop trust. I became a patient myself in 2013, and I think it played a major role as to why I decided to take time to get to know patients better and to help them overcome reservations that they may have. In 2013, I had a surgical procedure that was performed. I had a fibroid, a very large fibroid that was removed, and some abdominal hernia that was repaired. And this was a very expensive surgery, and it really, really debilitated me quite a bit. I was out of work for a period of about 5 months in recovery, and the recuperating period was really anxiety-racking. It really made me very, very anxious. Because I remember I had to see a lot of my doctors and all the different specialists that I visited with, I always, each time I walked into a doctor's office, I always just assumed the worst news. Each test that I had, I always assumed the worst result. So all this just created a feeling of vulnerability for me. Mind you, my doctors were really very nice. I had very nice nurses, very respectful and empathetic nurses and doctors that I worked with. But I still was very, very vulnerable. And in that vulnerability, I just had mixed emotions every day. Some days I would be sad. Some days I would be angry. I would ask myself, why is this happening to me? Some days I would be very hopeful and elated if I got maybe a positive result from a test. And some days I would just be downright overwhelmed. Because don't forget, I'm still, you know, a mother, I'm a wife, I have a job, but right now, you know, I wasn't working because I was recovering. So the whole scenario just created a feeling of being overwhelmed for me. Then I started to make the connection. I made the connection, and it made a lot of sense to me why so many patients could experience very similar anxieties. And sometimes some of these anxieties will just manifest as different attitudes of being angry or opinionated or defiant. They just may not know how to verbalize what they're going through, so they kind of tend to probably act it out. So it kind of made a lot of sense to me to make sure that when I get back to practice, I must give patients more benefit of the doubt when it's harder for me to relate to them, when they have their own reservations about me as a clinician. I am also a born-again Christian, and as a born-again Christian, I read my Bible a lot. I prayed a lot, and that helped me so much during my period of recovery. I have this Bible verse that always rang true to me each time I read it, Romans 12:15, that teaches us to rejoice with those that rejoice and to weep with those that weep. Job 32:8 is another verse that always rang true to me. It's that there's a spirit in man, an inspiration of God Almighty gives us understanding. So I knew I had to come to a level of understanding where I can begin to communicate much better with patients. I can begin to make patients at least give them that benefit of the doubt and help communicate in a way that they become less reserved when they are around me as a nurse practitioner, and go back to that state of mind when I was a nursing assistant in that subacute care in Brooklyn 25 years ago. And there are strategic ways to do this, Matt. It doesn't come automatically to everybody, because each and every one of us, for some reason or another, we have put up walls. It's very important to realize to break down walls and help people get out of their reserved state of mind or out of their comfort zone. It's very important for us all to know that there are strategic ways of communicating with people and making sure that we are building trust with them when we are doing that. And this is when I decided that I had to put all this in writing and come up with a book. And that's why I wrote this book, to identify all those different attitudes and personalities we may come across as clinicians that are pretty much due to underlying patient anxiety, and also going further and giving those simple tips that we can apply when we communicate with each particular patient attitude to help alleviate some of the anxiety and promote trust.
We're talking to Nonye Agonya, the author of Simple Tips to Developing a Productive Clinician-Patient Relationship. Thank you so much for sharing your personal story there. And seems like it was a blend of your clinical experience and your patient experience that led you to write this book. Was it in recovery that you decided to write this book? What was it that was so important to write the book at that time?
It was in recovery, and actually it was important for me also, because as nursing assistant, I wanted to get back that feeling, you know, that I've always had when I cared for patients, as when I was a nursing assistant. you know, that feeling of feeling complete when I'm in front of a patient, giving them care. We are both what I call our true selves. And there was, you know, conversation was not strained at all, because I found that as I advanced in my education and, so to speak, climbed the ladder in my profession, patients became less willing to communicate. Patients became more reserved when they were around me. Take, for instance, as a nursing assistant, I would communicate much easier with a patient, but when I became a registered nurse, I will find it much more difficult because the patient will not easily open up to me. They will not easily tell me things about their lives that will help me make that connection a little much easier, like I did when I was a nursing assistant. And as a family nurse practitioner, it was actually worse. At some point, I felt I was just treating a patient's disease and actually not treating the patient. So it was important for me to want to get back to that state of mind that I was in when I was a nursing assistant each time I had a patient. I wanted to get that back as a family nurse practitioner. So I had to make sure that I developed some of those skills and I write it down and I actually practice it. So that way patients will feel comfortable around me as a family nurse practitioner. And that way I could treat them as patients and also obviously treat the disease that they presented with. I found that patients trusted me more. I found that patients were more compliant to my plan of care as a nurse practitioner because they knew that I was coming from a good place. They knew that I was just not focusing on their disease, but I was focusing on them as a patient. Who are they? Are they mothers? Do they have children? How are the children doing? And these little questions that we would ask when we see patients makes a world of difference, and it doesn't take a lot at all. It doesn't take a lot, regardless of race or nationalities or background, culture, moral values. It doesn't take a lot to develop trust with another individual because we all experience the same types of anxiety, and this anxiety manifests itself as similar attitudes that we see every day, regardless of race. So that was when, to get to your question, Matt, it's really, I decided I had to write this book. I really had to put some of these points down on paper and begin to share this knowledge with my fellow colleagues. And also, hopefully, patients will benefit from it.
That is just very inspiring. I really love how you put that, you know, no matter what our differences are, we're all the same and we all need that level of care. And it doesn't matter who's providing the care. The one question I have, and just to touch upon something that you talked about earlier, could you explain why you think that there's a difference between a nursing assistant, an RN, and a nursing practitioner when it comes to patient communication and why those differences exist?
Well, that's a very difficult question, I must say, but it's interesting to find that when patients responded to me as a nursing assistant, they really were themselves. And like I said earlier, the more I gained knowledge, the less of themselves they became, the more reserved they became towards me. And it's really a question you ask that I don't know the answer to. I have to be honest with you. I don't know the answer to that. But I can speculate. I can speculate and say that maybe as a nursing assistant, patients felt less threatened by me as opposed to when I was a nurse practitioner. Maybe patients felt that if they asked a question to the nurse practitioner, I would consider that as a dumb question, versus if they ask the same question to a nursing assistant. So it's really a question that I don't know the answer to. And that is why in life, periods of self-reflection is very important. It's important for all of us to begin to reflect and ask ourselves, why do we feel comfortable in front of one person and we don't feel comfortable in front of another? And, you know, ask yourself questions regarding the opinions we have. Why do we have this opinion of one person and we have a different opinion of another person? So these are personal questions that only we can answer for ourselves. Nobody can answer that for us. And it's only when we self-reflect that that's when we begin to answer that. And then go a step further and also ask ourselves, if we've identified these reservations we have, what can we do to begin to overcome some of these reservations we have about one another? Remember, in life, moments of self-reflection, it's what makes us grow as individuals. When we stop reflecting about why we feel the way we feel, we become stagnant. There's a stagnation that happens in life, and we just will not grow. And when we are now thrown in a position where we are out of our comfort zone, we find we become so reserved, and then we cannot say anything. And sometimes we start acting out, and we act out in so many, you know, attitudes. We have attitudes that may not be very pleasant when we're in front of another individual. So I really don't know why nurse practitioner and nursing assistant, when they talk to the same patient, that particular patient will have different opinions of each discipline. But I can say that we must really self-reflect and find out why that is, and begin to work on ourselves and have that compassion for one another, godly compassion, give one another the benefit of the doubt. And that way, I believe we can start to work on trust improvement.
Speaking of trust improvement, does Simple Tips to Developing a Productive Clinician-Patient Relationship provide some of these tips and strategies for improving that trust and communication in the clinician-patient relationship?
Absolutely. It's almost like the science behind it, because I've always considered myself an independent researcher. I research always in my own head, you know, when I talk to people, what made them feel comfortable around me. Can I say the same thing to another person? Will it make the person comfortable? And it does. It's almost like magic. So when people present with similar anxieties and reservations, and I find that they are acting alike, regardless of their race, regardless of their nationality, their cultures, moral values, but I'm seeing similar attitudes, I find the best way to approach conversation. I find the best things to say to make that person say, wow, this nurse practitioner really wants to know who I am. I don't take any negative attitudes that come towards me personally. I don't take it personally, because I know it's because of an anxiety that I must address and make the patient become less anxious. So definitely in my book, I do write a lot of these tips. It has some cartoon dialogue also that depicts patient and physician interactions. And it's really a fun book.
I like the cartoons a lot. I think they're great. But, you know, you just touched on something that I want to expand on a little bit. Could you talk about some of these patient attitudes that are mentioned in the book and how you've overcome some of those challenges in your own practice?
Yeah. Let me go back first to an experience I had in Brooklyn when I was a nursing assistant that actually also was an eye-opener for me. It was one of the attitudes that ended up 25 years later, making it in my book as the patient attitude. In my first job as a nursing assistant, I had a particular day that I was given an assignment to do. And in an assignment, there are different patients that are assigned to each nursing assistant. And I remember I had, you know, made my rounds in the morning, said my pleasantries, made my pleasantries with all the patients, and they all seemed very happy to have me for that day. So I just told them I'll be right back. And I went to get my supplies together. And suddenly I was called up to the nursing station. And when I got to the nursing station, the head nurse had handed me a new assignment and said, oh, sorry, I made a mistake in your old assignment sheet. You are no longer assigned to, let's say patient X. You're no longer assigned to patient X. You now have a new patient as a substitute. And I didn't think anything of it. I said, okay. I took my new assignment, and it wasn't until during lunchtime, I think in the cafeteria, I was talking to another nursing assistant, and she said, oh, yes, there was a mistake in the scheduling, and you were giving, we assigned a patient who didn't like to be cared for by Black people. And I found that very puzzling, quite honestly, Matt. I can't even say that I was upset because I didn't even understand the whole concept of racism or being prejudiced and all of that. Because remember, I had just come from Nigeria and I was so happy and elated to be there to care for everybody, which I thought I had been doing till this incident happened. So I look back now and I didn't know this then, but that would be my suspicious patient in my new book. And when I say this, I look back, it saddens me. What makes me so sad is that she had her reservations, obviously, which I didn't take personal because I didn't understand what they were. But she never gave me a chance to get to know her. She never gave me a chance to, in my, you know, feeling of just being elated and happy, to probably help her overcome some of the reservations she had about being cared for by Black people. But the idea that the unit accommodated that by making their assignment sheet and not assigning any Black nursing assistant to her almost was what made me even sadder. Because what they did was keep her in her comfort state, in her state of being reserved and not growing, because then they denied her the opportunity to grow spiritually, to grow as a human being, to grow emotionally. So it was really what made me very sad. And I wished like I could go back 25 years ago and tell the head nurse, no, I will not stand for it. I need to take care of this patient. I have so many good stories to tell her from Nigeria. I need to know her, you know. But of course, that wasn't meant to be, because I didn't really know any better at all. And I just had taken respectfully, obviously, the new assignment that was given to me. So we have to understand in life that we cannot shy away from our reservations. We cannot afford to do that. Rather, we must have godly compassion for one another and give one another the benefit of the doubt, because each and every one of us have some sort of reservation. We have different backgrounds. We have different nationalities. We have different religions. We have different moral values. So it's almost expected that we must be reserved about something. There are some people that are reserved because of other people's age, other people's gender. Some people don't want maybe a male physician. Some people rather prefer female physician. Some people will not want based on nationality and religion. Some people will not want someone with a particular religious belief to care for them. And some people would prefer not. So these reservations exist for each and every one of us because of our diverse background. But we must not focus on that and try to shy away and stay in a little corner where we feel comfortable. We must try to have compassion for one another, give one another benefit of the doubt, and actually begin to communicate. 25 years ago, this patient, you know, blatantly made this verbal request to maybe the head nurse, and it was accommodated for. Today, it's different. We have a lot of diversity now in healthcare, and with this diversity, the suspicious patients will still exist. Because I still come across some suspicious patients, but they will not verbalize their reservations. They just have very subtle behaviors that makes it difficult to build trust, subtle behaviors that makes it difficult to make a connection. And it's important that we communicate in the right way to make sure that patients gradually pull down the walls that they have built around them over the years and become less reserved around us as clinicians. And that's exactly what, you know, you will find in my book, Matt.
It's so amazing. And I just wonder, it makes me sad that as a young woman, you immigrate to this country, you get into nursing to improve the lives of patients, and you're treated in this way. What did you do to not let that get your spirits down? You know, how did you, when you learned that, when you learned about that incident, what was it inside you that said, that's okay, I'm going to move on and not let that affect your growth as a nurse?
You know, remember I said I wasn't angry. I was actually puzzled. It was a very puzzling experience because I said, here I am. I'm happy to provide care. I'm happy to give care to every patient. And here is someone that needs help and doesn't want my help. That just didn't make any sense. So I'm happy about the fact that I didn't understand the concept of racism. I quite honestly say that. When I was age of 19, I just had so much happiness and enthusiasm in me to do what I really love to do. So I didn't take it personal at all. But down the line, of course, it has happened more than once over the course of 25 years, but probably not as blatant as someone telling me, don't care for me because I am black. But rather, when I get those subtle attitudes of I want to ask a question, I get cut off quickly, someone is not listening to me when I'm talking, or they have their own opinion about something. So there is a reservation about that. And I have to just tell myself, Nonya, you cannot take this personally. There is a reason why a patient ends up being reserved about a clinician. And you just have to ask the patient other things. Get to know who this patient is. And when you don't focus on that, but rather you focus on building a relationship with the patient, you find that you are not angry. You find that you could be disappointed because it is disappointing. It takes a lot of energy to try to get to know someone who seemingly does not want you to know them, you know, on first contact. But it is the challenge that we must overcome, not only in healthcare, but in life, as we communicate with one another. If we truly want to begin to build trust with one another, it is a challenge we must overcome. And being a born-again Christian helps a lot. It really does help because that Romans 12:15, to rejoice with those that rejoice and weep with those that weep, actually helps you separate the personal opinions that you may have about somebody and still see the person as someone that needs medical care, that which God has given you the ability to care for somebody. So you must extend that care because that's the ability God has given you. And you have to find a way not to take it personal. And I think that's what helped me to overcome all of that.
That is such a powerful message. And you shared in such a beautiful, eloquent way. For my listeners that want to learn more about you, how can they find you and your writing on the internet?
Well, I have a website. My website is www.ptdrsimpletips.com. PT, obviously, is the acronym for patient, PT, then DR, acronym for doctor, simpletips.com. I also blog quite a bit. It's a new found hobby that I have. I blog on KevinMD, so I have a couple of blogs there. And some of my blogs are all in my website, so you can get to the links for my blogs also through my website.
And we're going to make sure that on our podcast notes that we share all these links. So after you listen to this, please check out the podcast notes. Nonya Aganya, thank you so much for joining us today. We really enjoyed this. And thank you for sharing your inspirational message with all of us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Matt, for having me.
She's Nonya Aganya, family nurse practitioner and author of the book, Simple Tips to Developing a Productive Clinician-Patient Relationship. I'm Matt Cavallo. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. We look forward to bringing you another inspirational story soon. Thank you for listening.